Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is brought to you by the Era Media Group, publishers of ShowSite Magazine. Together, we are strong supporters of the American Kennel Club and the preservation of our purebred dogs. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are here at the AKC National Championship Dog Show brought to you by Royal Canin. And Pure Dog Talk, of course, brought to you by Era Media Group. And we have super special guest today. We have Piglet and her friend, Lori Wells. And Piglet and Lori were ACE Award winners last night, presented with the AKC Humane Fund Award for Canine Excellence. That's a mouthful.
I was going to say, that's very good.
And Piglet and Lori won their award in the search and rescue category, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And tell us about Piglet.
Well, Piglet is a lover.
A lover.
7-year-old Catahoula leopard dog. State dog of Louisiana. She's going to love her mama. She's been doing search and rescue since she was a wee tot.
And she does a very special and, I think, powerful type of search and rescue.
Yes, she actually is trained and certified to discover human remains.
So hard work for her, for you.
It is hard and it's emotional, but it's a fabulous answer for a family that's grieving and in need.
Yes, and a tremendous service that you provide communities.
Yes, and all volunteer.
That is amazing. And you're based in Southern California?
Yes.
Excellent. And you do that whole West Coast region on call-outs.
The Northwestern states, yes. My husband and I are connected with a couple of different teams that search that way. Wherever the need is, our organization will deploy to whoever needs our help.
So talk to me a little bit about this award. This means an awful lot to you, telling me off air that this was kind of emotional.
It is incredibly emotional, humbling. When they told me I won, I was just overwhelmed. It's such a huge honor for the American Kennel Club, first of all, to even recognize this. And with the support of Royal Canin and Yukonuba with dog food.
Right, that's amazing.
Unbelievable. We're just so humbled.
And how many human remains search dogs are there roughly, you think, in the United States? Because I know this is a very specialized section of search and rescue in general.
Yes, in the United States, I'm not real sure, but it's building. People are seeing the need for this detection. But I do know there's only a handful of Catahoulas out there working.
Yeah, I can imagine. What, half a dozen even?
At the most, yeah.
Wow. So tell us about the Catahoula leopard dog, because I just think they're cool, and I like to say Catahoula.
That's a fun word. It definitely is a fun word.
Totally.
Well, they are the state dog of Louisiana, bred originally to herd and hunt. The American Indians developed the breed in the early 1800s. There's a few breeds that went into the making of this, the Beauceron, a little bit of hound dog, Spanish Mastiffs, and Red Wolf.
So you've been able to go back and do like DNA genetic markers and check all this.
I did not do it.
Not you personally. It's been done.
But there's a lot of people that have. Yes, it's well documented.
Very cool. So how are the Catahoula dogs particularly adapted to doing search and rescue work? What do they bring that makes them particularly good at the job?
Well, any good search dog has to have a phenomenal hunt drive. And they do, since they were bred to herd and hunt. And Piglet actually comes from cow dog lines, because Catahoulas are cow dogs or hog dogs. The cow dog's a little more settled, a little more sensible-minded.
So the cow dogs and then the hog dogs?
Hog dogs.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Well, that was originally because they're wild hogs in the swamplands.
Okay, so they hunted boar or something like that.
Wild boar.
Wow. And they have the hunting drive. They're agile.
Yes.
Right? So they have to be able to go all day, I think.
Yeah, the stamina is definitely a plus in search and rescue. Although when we deploy, usually our shift is only about 3 or 4 hours because it's a lot. It's an intense
right.
3 or 4 hours. Bring the dog out of the field, they get a break for an hour or more, and then we go back.
And go back and do it again. So I'm saying half a dozen 3 or 4 hour a day shifts, that's very intense. And for you as a handler.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Well, we have to stay as fit as possible, and we have to be smart and hydrate and love on our dogs. Yeah.
Well, as long as the dog loves you, it seems like everything else is going to be okay.
Absolutely.
So can you talk about any of your successful searches?
One that I love is my husband and I. My husband does this as well. This is how we met, doing search and rescue.
Okay.
We were deployed to Mount Charleston in Las Vegas with a missing airman. And they found the vehicle, and we asked where our search area was, and they said basically all of Mount Charleston.
That's a big area.
So it was huge. So we were like, okay. We have trailing dogs as well, scent specific. So we got scent articles from the missing man.
Right.
And we deployed the trailing dogs in all areas, and we narrowed down the search area to this mountain. And we got some ground pounders with us, grabbed Piglet because he was expected to not be alive, and she went up and got him.
Wow. How old of a trail?
2 days. And the whole process of us working was about 4 hours to conclusion.
And now I read that she also does water search, which is another specific type of search and rescue that is also particularly difficult.
Absolutely. We actually had a search in California for a drowning victim, and they had been out searching for 7 days, and law enforcement finally called the dog in on day 8, and through a lot of grid patterns and going over that lake, she said where he was, and sure enough, he was there.
So can we talk a little tiny bit about what it takes to train a dog to this level?
It takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Mm-hmm. A lot of hard work, a lot of time. Mm-hmm. It's expensive and just the mileage driven. But it's a bond with your dog. And there are a lot of books, but there's nothing like doing it.
Doing it.
Yeah, you can read all you want, but you got to get out there and do it.
So we have talked on our program about the scent work, the new scent work competition. So would you think of that as kind of like a place to start if you wanted to go on later to do more advanced search and rescue type work? Or is that not the right foundation?
There's pros and cons for that because what we don't want our dogs to do, especially, is look for food or treats or things like that. It's human scent.
So you want to find human scent. What is their reward for having found human scent?
Well,
just having found it?
No, a lot of people do use treats once you get there, as opposed to the trail leading there. Toy drive, a lot of dogs want that. Throw the ball, tug. I've always trained them to want mommy's love. They are so happy they've made me happy. So just a whole bunch of love, because I've always got that. Handlers forget their toys and treats and things. I've always got love.
And I see how she is interacting with you tells me that she's wanting to make sure that you're okay.
Yes. Well, in a few of my interviews, they struck some emotional levels.
Right.
And she was concerned.
Yes. And this is, I'm seeing her respond to that, which I think is really, really amazing. And this is a question that I don't know if you can answer, but I wonder if the dogs feel the intensity and the emotion that goes with this particular work.
Yes, absolutely. They know. They're very intuitive. And the relationship and the bond that you make and build with these guys through the training and everything, you're in tune with each other. And they're not dogs that we trade in to put in a kennel. You know, a lot of other organizations do that. These are our companions, and they're just family.
So how many search and rescue dogs have you worked with in your time? You said you and your husband met this way, so I assume this is something you've been doing for a while.
Yes, I'm on my 5th trailing dog.
Oh, my goodness.
And she is my first human remains detection dog.
Wow.
And my husband's on his 3rd trailing dog.
And do you primarily work with the Catahoula dogs, or you've worked with other breeds?
We have Catahoulas and Bloodhounds.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bloodhound man trailing, I've talked to a couple of different people about it, and I had one of my early mentors did Bloodhound man trailing, and it's amazing. So just because you're someone who does full-on active search and rescue with bloodhounds, talk to our listeners about that incredible bloodhoundness that is so much, takes any other dog's scenting ability and multiply it times 20 gazillion.
When they're on scent, they're on scent, and right. they go, and you better just keep up. Which actually can get them in trouble
yes.
because they don't know their limitations and they don't know to stop
right.
and take a break. So we have to make sure they do that and have some water and just chill out for a minute and then go back. And they go right back.
Wow.
There's no harm to stopping
no.
them along
no.
that trail.
Because they're not going to forget it.
People think they do. No, they no. don't. They mm-hmm. absolutely know.
What's the oldest, and again, this is from my early history as a kid, oldest trail you've worked with a bloodhound?
Personally, we've worked usually between 7 and 10 days because our training is all ages of trails,
right.
all surfaces, and all weather conditions. So we have a gauge. We know how they mm-hmm. respond to all of those scenarios. And then we can tell how they work those scenarios and know what they're telling us in each scenario.
And that is so important. You talked about the bond. So being able to read your dog and being able to know what they're telling you.
Yes.
Absolutely critical.
Because we have nothing without that.
Right. And have you worked with the bloodhounds? My understanding is they are still the only dogs that are allowed to testify in court. That they're
no.
Okay,
that
has that
actually,
changed?
Yes.
That okay,
has
so tell me about that
up.
Because I think that's really such a powerful thing.
Yes, I actually have a friend that retired law enforcement trailing dog handler.
Mm-hmm.
Used his blue tick coonhound. And I think some shepherds have been in court. I almost got called into court, even though I'm a volunteer.
Right.
Her uncle, my very first Catahoula and trailing dog, we solved the case and we were on standby to go to court.
Wow. They
were going to listen. So
wow.
I think that's really relaxed.
Interesting. I love that. And it's just once again, when we talk about purebred dogs and we talk about predictability and we talk about preservation breeding, you tie it all together right here.
Yes.
It gives me shivers. I mean, I literally have goosebumps because it is so powerful how much these animals can do for us.
Absolutely. And they will do mm-hmm. for you. There's no parameters there. It makes me emotional. Just mm-hmm. the love
right.
and the trust.
And they are so involved in society and they have such an impact
yeah.
in society that maybe people don't even understand.
Exactly. We definitely need to understand.
Right. And I don't think we've really plumbed the depths of what dogs can do. I mean, think about the dogs that are sniffing out cancer cells.
Exactly.
To me, this is like one of the coolest parts of that human-canine partnership that we have in this world.
Oh, yes. Any medical condition.
Right.
It's the work that's going
right.
into that. And I
tons
actually
of
have
research.
A bloodhound that's going to be doing that.
What else did I hear about? It was cancer. It was diabetes, maybe? Is it diabetes
and
that
any,
I was thinking
any
of?
Any disease that is blood origin that changes
the blood chemistry?
They can check that. Yes, they can
interesting.
Check, yeah.
To me, that's just fascinating.
Yes. All Who right. needs doctors?
Right? Not me, apparently. So going forward, mm-hmm. your plans for the future with Piglet, is she still good? She's 7?
She's
still
seven.
Solid. She's still sound. She's still working.
Absolutely. All of our dogs ended up around 13 years of age, just done. So they were just not able to do it anymore.
But they worked well, well. And that's amazing that they're that long lived and that healthy into the working age.
Yes.
So you are a volunteer.
Yes.
Do you have a nonprofit so we could provide our listeners with a link?
My organization is Search Dogs 24/7, and we have a Facebook page, and the number's 24/7, and we also have a website, searchdogs247.org.
And we will make sure that there is a link on the website so that people can go check it out and get more information.
It would be incredibly helpful.
And we're happy to do it. Thank you so much for joining us, Lori.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Excellent. All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley and the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. And Allison is going to bring us some great tips on proper etiquette for showing your bitch in season. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I'm awesome. So we've got a girl, and of course, as soon as the entries close, she comes in season.
Exactly. So again, this is a question that I get asked, you know, by a lot of new people because it is daunting to them. You know, you have your entries put in, you're so excited about going to the dog show, and boom, Murphy's Law, your bitch comes in season. So first of all, we're talking about confirmation shows. So absolutely positively, you cannot show your bitch in season in any of the obedience or performance events. But in confirmation shows, yes, you can show your bitch in season. It is really no problem, except for in junior handling or junior showmanship within North America. You cannot show your bitch in season. And for those instances, they will let you replace your junior handling dog with another dog. You just have to go to the show secretary and make those arrangements. But if you're showing in an all-breeder specialty show, it's no problem to show your bitch in season. So clearly you want to make sure that you stay away from the other dogs because, first of all, your bitch is going to have heightened sensitivities. Like, she could be a little more aggressive. And, I don't really mean dog aggressive, but, like, a little more tough and pumped up. She could be a little more meek, right? Things could worry her a little bit more because she's in season. So for your own bitch's sake, yes, you do want to stay away from the other dogs. But as a courtesy to the other exhibitors, especially exhibitors with males, you want to just say, hey, my bitch is in season, you know, especially if they're coming up behind you. It's not really your job to stay away from everybody. Yes, you want to not be in the middle of everything, like walk into a group where you know it's all male dogs, but it's not your job to stay totally away from everybody, even if, you know, it is bothering another dog. But yes, as a courtesy, please tell the other exhibitors, oh, my bitch is in season, and usually they're just going to stay away. So the next thing is, you know, you don't want a judge to examine your bitch and A, put their hands where they're not needed, and then they have a bit of a mess on their hands because it's going to upset the judge, some more than others, but nobody wants that to really happen. And also, it could really upset your bitch. So just as the judge approaches your bitch to go over her, just say, oh, she's in season, or I'd like to tell you she's in heat, or whatever. And, you know, they're all going to say, thank you very much for letting me know. And, you know, if I'm lucky enough to go winner's bitch, or say I win the breed with a bitch and I still am showing under the same judge, like either for best of winners or in the group, you know, those judges are judging up to 175 dogs a day. They might not remember, you know, my golden retriever, which was one of 99 golden retrievers, was in season. So I'll just remind them, oh, just remind her she's still in season, you know, or she's in season, or just something just so that they're still aware, right? I mean, like, it is something that they hear 25 times, 50 times a day. So it's no problem just to, hey, heads up. And, you know, most people really appreciate it. So my best tip is to just let people know in a quiet way. Remember that it's not your job to absolutely stay away from everybody else. Like if somebody say, well, your bitch is bothering my dog, you need to move over there. No, I don't. You can move your dog, right? But just be polite and courteous about it, and then it's no problem at all.
And I think you make a really good point there, Allison, we might focus on just for a second. So you know that one of the exhibitors in the ring has a bitch in season, and you have a dog that's 18, 24 months old and just exactly horny teenager. So what's your best bet then?
Well, I do a couple things. So first of all, I'll usually have some Vicks VapoRub or just plain old vanilla extract in my tack box. I guess that should have been under the top three weird things, but I'll just put like a little bit under their nose just to kind of distract them from the smell. But I will basically, if I do have that rangy teenage boy that just will not let it go, I do everything in my power to distract them, right? Like I give them extra bait. I play with them with a toy. I definitely face them the other way. I mean, we've all been in that position where we have a young specials male and we get around to the end of the line and winner's bitch is in season. And I mean, there is nothing you can do. You can't change the spot that you're in. You can't move. You are stuck there. So that's when all your creative handling forces come out. So if you have somebody that could run and grab the Vicks from your tack box, have them do that. Turn your dog the other way until, you know, and don't stack that dog until the last minute. Turn him the other way. Let that bitch do her down and back or her around to the end and then stack your dog. And yes, you're just going to have to be really good at distractions at that point.
This is a situation where I find that I'm proofing my watch me command.
Yes, very much so.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Allison. And listeners, don't forget Pure Dog Talk 25 when you check out to purchase one of Allison Foley's online classes. That saves you 25% on your registration. Well worth it. There's probably an entry fee in it for you. So thanks again, Allison.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk, brought to you by the Aramedia Group, publisher of ShowSite Magazine, your home for purebred dogs.